I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
On What's Next today, we are in Jamestown. As a matter of fact, at the Jamestown YWCA. With us, we have a load of guests here with us. We have the executive director, Amanda Giesing. Indo Quinones is the Mission Impact Director. Alizé Scott is the Social Justice and Race Equity Director. Jackie Cook, the Director of Women to Women and Young Women Choose in Action. And also Nancy Okerlund, the Transition Supportive Housing Director. Thank you for being with us, and thanks for all of your time today. Let's go around the room just a little bit and talk about, if for nothing else, just about the mission of the YWCA. I just made a note of how, you know, right on the website, and it's been in place for many years, eliminating racism and empowering women. Who wants to start off just about the mission of the YWCA, specifically, of course, here in Jamestown?
Well, I'm the Mission Impact Director, so I guess I'll start. Mm-hmm. Mission Impact Director is just a name for making sure our mission is in all our programs and facilitating that with directors and the public. So I see it's very broad, and people are like, how are you going to eliminate racism? Mm-hmm. And empowering women, that's also a big pill to swallow. And here we're saying, we know eliminating racism and empowering women is probably not going to get solved in our lifetime, you know, or just abolishing racism forever. It's a process. So we know that our mission is a process, and we try to convey that with everyone that we come across, in terms of like partnerships with other organizations, any of the people we work with, and we're trying to be as real as possible and as true to us. We are just living the mission. Gotcha. So as long as everybody here at YWCA, including staff and our parents and people we serve, know that that's something we're striving for, and we're learning as well and growing, then that's just, you know, part of the process.
Sure. Yeah. But how about maybe just a tad more specific then? Like you said, you're looking as the Mission Impact Director, you're looking at making sure that all these elements of the YWCA, and we'll get into exactly all these elements, and we have enough people with enough titles here, there's a lot. But when you're looking into it, what are you looking for to make sure that they mirror each other?
Well, make sure that every program is equitable.
Okay.
We'll start there. We started to look inward. When I say we, YWCA Jamestown has fairly new administration. 2-3 years. Amanda has been here. Alizé's been here a little longer in a different capacity, but we want to take YWCA Jamestown to what it was, which was a lot of people in the community just didn't see us as eliminating racism and empowering women. They saw us as a daycare center.
Okay.
You know?
Which it is.
Which it is. Mm-hmm. We do have early child education, but that's just one of the things we do. We wanted to really show that we are mission-based, and this is the mission. And so we try to make sure that everyone who works for us, everyone who we serve, is being treated as equitably as possible. So making things as accessible as possible, not just physically, but making sure that our after-school program, for example, all the children who could possibly need our services and their parents know about scholarships and subsidies for those programs. And that's just a small example.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'll throw out this as a general question then. It's interesting how you mentioned the last 3 years. Well, I think if you look at the last 3 years, you might, especially when it comes to dealing with issues of race. Mm-hmm. I mean, even this particular show that we're on right today started just less than 2 years ago after the racist attack on Jefferson Avenue Tops in East Buffalo. My point is there's been a lot of change when it comes to dealing with race. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we can have a general conversation maybe about how maybe not only this particular entity has changed or is altering its approach, but maybe just what you see in the community at large. Anybody want to try to take that one on? I see Elizé with a big smile on her face. I guess you just knew you were elected.
Sure. Yeah. I feel within the last few years, especially with the Black Lives Matter movement going more global after the George Floyd incident, that we see here locally especially that people are becoming aware that after Martin Luther King Jr., racism was not solved, unfortunately, although many of us had that idea that the civil rights movement did solve racism, that obviously isn't the reality. So it really opened people's eyes up to the world that people that are from historically marginalized communities are actually living. And so I'm very happy that our community has finally realized that and that so many other organizations are taking the necessary steps to embed equity within their missions or within the programming that they offer or even just how they reach out to the communities that they've already been serving and making sure that they're educating themselves along the way. Because again, as Indo said, this is a process and things are always changing. There's new things always coming about. But I'm very happy even for how the Y has transitioned and really made sure that we were trying to fulfill the eliminating racism portion of our mission. Because when we're thinking about something as big as racism and then also thinking about that second half of our mission to empower women, they really go hand in hand. You know, you can't empower women if you're forgetting about a large sector of women of color. And so the fact that now we are really striving to make sure that all of our programs have that embedded in them and making sure that we are fulfilling our mission is very important to me as a Black woman working in this organization. Because again, when you're looking at, you know, Black scholars, historically, they always talk about, you know, we can't really get anywhere until we are making sure that Black women, especially queer Black women, all of their oppressions are eliminated. Once we hit that, we know that we have eliminated any other oppression that anybody could ever experience. So being able to play a hand in this work is very important. And again, I'm just very proud that our community has kind of stepped up to realize that this work is very important, even if you're not a part of these historically marginalized communities.
I'll just follow up and kind of build the conversation off of what Alizé just said there. But just when it comes to what you've seen of the YWCA, I find it interesting to see is when you start contemplating the many layers of racism, there's so much embedded, right? There's so much embedded in our language and in our habits and our customs. And I'm just wondering maybe, you know, for anybody else here, if you've seen that and you've learned certain things along the line here, that are like, I think differently about this issue now than, say, I did 2 years ago. Or we do things differently here at the YWCA now, differently than we did 3 years ago.
I would say even just doing Young Women Choosing Action. That is a trauma-informed, culturally responsive program that is meant for 13 to 19-year-olds. So introducing that trauma-informed, that cultural responsiveness is a huge step that we are taking.
Does it help with what you're doing?
It is what I do.
Right. Okay.
So right.
But do you find more success because you have a more informed approach to things or a better understanding of things?
I would say so. Mm-hmm. I would say so. So YWCA actually put out like a Train the Trainers, which went over a lot of those different things. So whereas I, as a white woman, knew some of the things, some of the training actually went in more depth so that you can learn from other cultures and be more culturally aware.
And Nancy, I saw you over there contemplating this conversation. What could you add?
I've been here for 23 years. I was born and raised in a small community here in this area. And I have learned so much by coming here and by dealing with all of the populations. And when things were going well, when things slowed down, when things just sometimes became hard to deal with. Over 650 women have gone through the program since 2001. And it comes in waves and it changes. And I have to be very much aware of how I speak, how I feel. I try to make sure that I'm aware and consider their feelings and their beliefs before I think of anything else. That they are important, they are here, and I don't mean to sound, I'll say the residents, because they're an amazing group of people, all colors, all ethnicities. I have learned so much, and I think I have grown because of those lessons from being naive. And
you say you as much learned from these women that you've been helping through the years.
Mm-hmm.
They've taught you
a lot, because again, I was born and raised in a small community here, and I was very naive, and the lessons are amazing, the people are amazing, this organization is amazing, because they all contribute. We're all working for the same thing, and hopefully someday we'll make a difference.
Which community did you mind sharing me which community you grew up in?
Sinclairville,
okay. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with that for sure. So Jamestown has changed a lot in the last couple of decades for sure. So that must have been a part of the learning curve, right? That there was a racial makeup here in Jamestown now, mm-hmm. but there wasn't here maybe when you were growing up in Sinclairville, right?
Right.
Yeah. What has that been like, not just if you can make an observation, but for the general community? Has it been a welcoming kind of merger, or has it been a little more difficult to navigate, for lack of a better term?
I think the last few years have been much more difficult to navigate, because we're seeing more and more homeless issues. With the pandemic, harder for individuals and families to find decent housing. It's set us back quite a ways. And we have a much larger homeless population, and from all walks of life, and hopefully we can turn it back around and be headed in the right direction.
So homeless, so there's a housing crisis here in Jamestown?
Yes.
Yeah. And just like in most struggling communities, and I'm sure you talked about Rust Belt and any of these former steel towns, we are former steel town area. I come from a former steel town place, and in Dunkirk, and it just kind of shows how everything, all oppression is related, mm-hmm. and how one thing can affect anything else. What Nancy was talking about really reminded me of how, as Mission Impact and all the administration tries to make sure that the staff is educated on biases and their own biases. And because, like Nancy, sometimes you grow up in a silo. Even if you are living in Jamestown, you are sometimes in a silo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the reality of how our community was, you know, has been. And we're trying very hard mm-hmm. to revamp that, make it so everyone looks at everyone else's experience and their barriers and challenges, and see how it actually relates to their own barriers and challenges, and how it's all systemic. And that's a very hard thing to teach when you don't do this work for 20 years, or you don't do this work for 10 years or so. Part of the challenge is that you have to see it and live it for so long to really understand it. And that's how the change happens. And when people say, like, how long is it going to take? It'll take generations for us to see an actual, our work to actually see it succeed. And hey, I'll take it. If I don't see it in my generation, I hope my nieces and nephews get to see it.
Is there a frustration though from that that length? I mean, it sounds
peaks
like
and valleys.
Sounds like you have the right perspective. But.
it's peaks and valleys. Yeah.
Yeah. Who wants to speak to that, Allison?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel this work can be very frustrating sometimes. And again, as a Black woman, it's even more frustrating because I'm fighting against these oppressions as I'm experiencing them. So it's very exhausting to be a part of this work. But as Indo said, it's such important work. So, you know, we have those days where we're like, no, we have to keep going because we know the kind of world that we want to leave behind. And then there are other days where it's like, get somebody else to do it. Man, this is so hard. And again, it's also frustrating because I'm a native of the Jamestown area, so I'm very familiar with, you know, the culture here, and we are kind of a little ways behind when it comes to racial equity and, you know, making sure that we're aware of systemic racism and these bigger racisms that go beyond just these individual kind of interactions. And so that's something that I always have to keep in the back of my mind when we are having these kind of community events or community discussions is everybody is on different levels of learning. Everybody has a different understanding of things and everybody has kind of these different interactions that they've experienced. There are some people who have probably never even come across a person of color before. So trying to keep that in mind definitely can make this work a little bit harder when we've been doing it for so long or we have like the formal education in this. But again, it's a fight that we want to keep fighting. So we're just going to fight through the frustration and hopefully make it out on the other side and do some good work despite some of the obstacles that we come up against.
And just to kind of go back to the first question you asked me about mission impact, part of that is making sure that any person who's dealing, maybe not dealing, but managing their work life and when their work life is dealing with actual people who are facing real life challenges and then it affects you, part of being a good social worker, community worker, coordinator of any of this anti-racist work is self-care. And it sounds very, like the words I like to say, it sounds very kumbaya, where you're just like, oh, now we have to reflect and meditate, or now we have to come together and talk about what our feelings are. That's important work. That's more important than people. That's another thing that's probably from generations past was not used. And we're trying to do things differently.
Right.
We're trying to see if this might be able to help us maintain momentum, actually reflecting, saying, hey, I cannot deal with this issue today. Alizé, can you deal with this issue? Because I, you know, I've reached my my limit, you know,
right,
or the week or the month, depending on what it is. And relying on each other and building relationships within YWCA Jamestown, that's very important. I feel like this is probably one of the first places that has really considered that as part of the process of helping outside,
right,
helping our actual people who are in transitions, our parents who are dropping off their kids. If we're not in the right headspace, we're not going to serve as best as we can.
I certainly can appreciate that. We're here at the YWCA Jamestown, and let's use the self-care. Let's have a self-care discussion here, shall we? And we'll start with Jackie Cook, the Director of Women to Women, and also Young Women Choosing Action. How about for you? I mean, do you see the types of frustration that we just heard Indo and Alizé telling us? And I guess for you, how do you then try to work through it?
I do. I definitely see it. Being that I have worked with teenagers in this area for the past 2 years, and prior to that, I lived in Kansas City, Missouri. So very different, very, very different. But one of the ways, like Indo said, is the relationships here. This is probably the first place that I've ever felt that I can sit down and I can talk about things. I mean, last week we had a huge discussion about racial injustices and stuff, Alizé, Indo, and myself.
where we were able to sit down and talk about those different things and our perspectives and how, like Nancy said, I was naive until I experienced some of the things. So definitely talking and building those relationships is my self-care here.
It also sounds like you have to be vulnerable a little bit, right?
Yes, yes. And very yet, vulnerable.
But yet you feel like you can be that in this space.
Oh, yeah. And the thing about vulnerability, too, with working with teenagers is you have to give them a little bit of yourself in order for them to open up and tell you how they're feeling and what's going on in their lives. You have to be able to give a little bit of yourself.
All right, Nancy, how about for you? Self-care, I mean, you're almost as old as I am, I'm guessing. And so because of that, you and I didn't know anything about self-care when we were young folks. What about for you and your work as the transition supportive housing director? How about for you? I mean, again, you're dealing with people, women, who are going through massive difficulties in their lives. That's got to be stressful for you. How do you deal with that?
We have a very good staff here, and we can bounce ideas, bring frustrations. Amanda is excellent at it because I've been in her office a lot. I'm on call 24/7. Some of my self-care is in itself seeing how all of our programs impact and individuals and families, and to be able to, especially in the housing program, to see individuals and families be able to grow and overcome their barriers and start to live life again instead of hiding from it. That to me, in a way, is self-care, because in every program, the results that are happening, you hear so often, if it wasn't because of the YWCA, do I go home sometimes and watch Never Come Back? Absolutely. But and I only live 3.5 miles away. But I can't imagine doing anything else. And the rewards far outweigh any of the sad things, because so many people with our services change, and they change for the better. And I just continuing to learn every day.
You're able to keep that in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Then go home to a grandson, 2 great-grandkids, 7 cats, a dog, and a rabbit.
That's got to help. How about you, Alizé? What about your talk to me? Because you were kind of open the door to this when you were talking about these community meetings, which I want to get back to a little bit. Things you run into, but how about for you? How do you deal with this?
I take my days. So if I need a day, I'll text Amanda or I'll email her and say, hey, I need a mental health day, or I am getting a massage today, I'm getting a facial today. I make sure that I take the time that I have earned here in this company to take a step back and to really just decompress and not center this work so much. Because again, we need that in order to fill other people's cups. We need to make sure that our cups are full. So taking care of ourselves is very important. So making sure that I take the time when I have the time to take it is what I do for self-care.
How about for you and Noah?
The same. I need my own time to kind of decompress, just stay in the car for a little longer in the morning or in the afternoon. Those little things, they do help. Remind yourself that to set your own boundaries, and it's okay to set a boundary. You're not weaker. I use other people as sounding boards a lot. Are you willing to hear me vent about this thing that's driving me crazy? You know, I think that's a good tool to use with someone you really trust, and I do that. know what your limit is, and part of it is doing this for so many years, you realize, okay, this is my limit, or these are my limits. It does take time for you to find out what your boundaries are, but once you do, it's if you have a good support system as well as great coworkers, then It's not that bad, actually.
Very nice, very nice. We're here at the YWCA Jamestown, in Jamestown, New York, with What's Next. Our guests, Nancy Okerlund, Jackie Cook, Alizé Scott, Indo Quinones, and we haven't really talked much to the executive director, Amanda Giesing. She's very quietly, patiently just standing by, ready to offer resources. Alizé, you mentioned about going out into the community, and sometimes these, you know, you're here in a space where, you know, diversity and equity is important, and now you're out in the community, and like you said, maybe you're dealing with somebody who maybe never saw a person of color or never met anybody like that. What have been some of the, maybe if you can share a tale or two about what you've run into, what it's kind of caught you off guard, like, whoa, I didn't think I would see this in the year 2023, 2024. What about that? Can you share?
I feel like everything catches me off guard. Just because I always think, really? Like, it's 2024 or it's 2023? Like, why is this still a thing? But I feel, even when I'm invited into these spaces, I experience a lot of microaggressions. Mm. So people wanting me to give them, like, basically a whole spreadsheet of my credentials to as of why I'm an expert in this area, even if they called me in as the expert.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very bizarre when that happens. And I'm always so shocked, even though, again, it's like a regular occurrence. But I feel, aside from that, another thing that we really see is there's this fear around talking about something like racism. People don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't want to get it wrong. Or, you know, just people just aren't comfortable talking about it in general. So there's kind of this projection that happens when you are exposing them to things that maybe are a little bit sensitive to them and might have, you know, touched a nerve a little bit because maybe they were the aggressor at some point and they've said that to somebody even though it was an inappropriate thing to say. So now you've struck a chord with them. And so some of the things I've experienced is that kind of backlash of, oh, well, I'm not racist, or, oh, well, no, you can't say that, or you need to figure out, yes, the defensiveness. You need to figure out a different way to say that. And so I typically respond with, this is a great time for you to do some self-reflection, because why are you getting so angry? There's no need to be so angry when we're just trying to have a conversation. We try to make the spaces as inviting as possible. So I always open it up with, I don't care what, like, your political beliefs are, I don't care how you vote, I don't care about any of that. We are all human beings. We should be able to sit down and have these open discussions about these very pressing issues that are affecting all of us. Even if you feel as a white person racism doesn't affect you, it very much does affect you. And so it's important that we are able to have these open conversations. So we try to make the space very inviting. So whenever anything like that happens, I always just try to let them know, like, this is a time for self-reflection. Here are some resources. You can read some more. You can watch this video. Maybe you just need a better understanding so that way you can process this a little bit better. Feel free to email me if you have any more questions. But yeah, that's a lot of the frustration that I deal with when we do go out into the community. So my credentials being questioned and then just these kind of defensive reactions.
I'd like to think if you get called back, they're not asking about for your credentials anymore, right?
No, okay. No, they're not.
you kind of live that for sure.
Yes.
And kind of to just reiterate, the microaggressions was a little more, until I learned what they really were, I lived with them, and I just thought that was just part of life. I'm going to have to deal with this forever. And the truth is, no, we have to start checking ourselves. And I do cultural responsive, equity and inclusion training for other organizations, for staff and for administration for them. And it's really difficult in a room full of adults who do this stuff, who actually work face-to-face with children and people in their community, to actually admit to themselves and admit to others that they have biases and they have privileges. I think that when that is brought up, people do start to get very defensive.
Sure.
And so what do you do to, like, break down that defensiveness?
All right.
You start talking about your own privileges and own biases and everybody else's, and see that these aren't bad things. These are just things that has happened, and it's part of life, and we have to talk about it. And another thing is that guilt that you start feeling, it's a good thing because it's the first step for growth. And sometimes no matter how many times you say it and how many try to find other ways to say it, some people are just going to, they're uncomfortable with being uncomfortable, and they don't want to. It's that fear. And you can just keep trying. You could, you know, bring a horse to water, but.
Right. I'll throw this out to anybody who wants to take it. Well, how about, okay, you know, there's the reaction of guilt, or I'm a little nervous to wade into these waters. We're talking about racial matters. Mm-hmm. What about the reaction? I know that hopefully there are not many, but we know they exist. It's, you know, this is, it's embedded. This is who I am. This is how I see the world. You know, it might be from, you know, the 19th century. That's just who they are. What about, have you had any kind of dealings? I know that's part of a pretty extreme example right there, but that type of reaction, and maybe again, how you might navigate that kind of, please, Amanda.
I think this is an instance where we want to make sure we're being tough on systems and soft on people. We're all products of what we've been taught, what our experiences are. And so what we really want to impress upon people is that there is an opportunity for growth for everyone. We really do have to meet people where they are, but give them as much education and opportunity to at least advance a little bit in their understanding of equity for everyone. So, yes, there are people out there who, you know, vehemently believe that there is no racism or that they can't change. Another one might be pronoun usage or, transgendered individuals, and really pushing back to, well, I just don't believe in that. You know, if an individual would call here and give me that, and as the executive director, I've had individuals call to complain about certain things. And if that was the case, it's always, well, this is our belief. This is what we expect people in our buildings and our staff to follow. If this isn't something that you're comfortable with, there are other organizations that may better suit your values, and you're welcome to go to those organizations. But we really do try to help all individuals at least understand, as human beings, we're constantly growing and evolving. And what we really need to do is just connect with each individual on an individual basis and help them to maybe understand, while they may have never experienced racism, that doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't have a different perspective as them. And a lot of it has to do with the color of their skin. And how can we help that person understand that racism does exist? So.
Amanda, I'm glad that we were able to get you into the conversation here. I guess we found a button there. I'll leave that out there. I mean, I thought Amanda gave a great answer, but I mean, does anybody want to share an experience or thought on that particular topic? I mean, you know.
I think it's important when you do this work, especially, you know, for us people of color that are doing this work, that we give ourselves permission to not engage with individuals. Because at a certain point, it is harmful for us. Yeah. And like, we shouldn't have to undergo that mental strain, because we know that racism greatly impacts the mental and even the physical health of people of color. So making sure that, you know, we engage to an extent of, I'm willing to help you learn, but if you're not at that point yet, I'm going to take a step back. And I think that we all should be able to give ourselves permission to do that, because, again, our mental health is very important. So
that's where I feel like I try to step in. Like, we try to have a really great relationship, and that if Endora or Alizé feel that they're not being fully accepted in a space, that's when I want to come in. I only want to come in when they need, I don't want to say a bouncer, but when they need that extra privileged person to kind of act as a shield. I don't want to be the person that's there to speak for them or to look at as the leader in front of them. I'm really just here when they need that extra support, and that's the only time I like to step in.
Yeah, and it's funny that I finally actually see the using your privilege and allyship for what it is. Alizé and I, women of color, no matter how many credentials and you could, you know, like your life, you know, experiences, people just maybe because of that barrier, color barrier, or township, you know, there's also Chautauqua County and all of Lake Southern Tier, like depending on the town you're from, there's kind of mistrust. We like to rely on our colleagues, and Amanda has been a good support, and all these three women have been, they use their privilege for what it's meant to be used for, to help the ones who in the system are not getting what they need and what we're all owed, which is, you know, the basic human rights and respect.
Let's switch around here then just a little bit. Jackie Cook, let's talk about your work as the director of Women to Women. What's Women to Women?
Women to Women is the Jamestown Chautauqua County's 18-plus free mentorship. So it's to find women in the community that are able to help other women in the community to either have career rejuvenation or those who are starting out their careers to get onto their career path, or if they've got personal goals like housing or whatever, their mentors can also help with that.
Are there are specific people identified, or is it people who are looking for help? What is it?
You apply. So if you feel like you're in need, then you apply as a mentee. If you feel like you want to help someone else, you apply as a mentor.
Oh, you're taking mentors.
Both.
Oh,
mentors,
really?
And mentees. Yep.
So you're looking for mentors.
Yep. And mentees.
You don't have enough?
In one night, we went from 4 pairs to 8 pairs. So we're getting the word out there a little bit more, but we're always accepting.
Yeah. It sounds like it could be a tremendously rewarding relationship.
Yeah.
What do you see? What do you see coming out of these relationships?
So far, so this is, we're kind of revamping it, kind of fell off. And so now I've got younger women, usually younger, paired with an older woman who has got her bearings already set. So they're kind of able to more guide that person. So it's interesting to see. As much as I'm involved, I'm also take a step back because they are 18 years old and they don't need a babysitter.
You sure they don't need a baby?
I mean,
my daughter's 22. No,
hey, tell her to sign up. I'll help her.
break the reins from her father, right? Let's switch over to Nancy Okerlund in transition supportive housing. So are we talking about different types of women who find their way into your program? And is it cases of domestic violence, or is it homelessness, or is it all of the above and then more?
Total range.
Okay.
Everyone's just one or two disasters away from homelessness. I've had women with master's degrees who had a good life and through various situations found themselves to be homeless. We have the entire top floor of this building. It is a community living facility. We're not staffed 24/7, so there is an assessment process we go through. And the staff office for us is right on the floor with them, which does make a difference. I have seen older women take the younger ones under their wing to help them make through it. I've seen racial biases between the women that make me want to cry. Mm. I've seen some leave because they're not going to be in that kind of situation. But I've also seen an awful lot of women be able to change their perceptions of the people that they're living with and that inhabit this community. It's an experience every single day. But we all learn, and if it's not, the program doesn't work for them. It's no mandated, you have to stay 30 days or you have to stay 3 years. If they're ready to go or they don't feel that the program's right for them, then they move on, as we also do. But I can honestly say there's a lot of women and youngsters learning how to be better.
What kind of services or what's inside the program for these people who come through your program?
We provide case management, support services, someone to talk to, independent living skills assessments and assistance. We refer to a lot of outside agencies for the things that we can't provide. They move at their own rate. There's no limit on the amount of time that they can stay. And so it's a very varied, but it's a very comprehensive program. We try to fill in the gaps that they're seeing right now, and get them hooked up with support services or agencies that can best help them reach the goal that they want to have, and how the Y can best help them reach those goals.
You know, we've talked about, you know, how difficult and challenging and trying the your collective work can be here. So we know that there are difficult stories and stories that aren't, we'd call success, but you probably have more than a few success stories that you can tell us. Can you share one that stands out to you that just shows you how getting to a safe space can help?
I'm sure she won't mind. Yeah, our office manager and accounts receivable, Becky. I started in 2001 and she was here in 1999. Youngster, pregnant, was staying in the team program, living here at the YWCA in our program. And the circle came full. She's back to working with us now, and she has made an amazing, amazing journey. She has three beautiful daughters. She's one of the best, if you want to say, advertisements for the program. But every once in a while, I'll have a former resident call or stop. A lot of individuals were the first ones to graduate from in their family from high school. And I had one young lady, again, first one to graduate from her family, working part-time at CVS, going to JBC. I got invited to her graduation from JBC. I've been to, I think, 7 high school graduations at Chautauqua Institution. And once you have a safe place to live, then you can focus on all the peripheral issues that come with it. We had a young lady years and years ago from Pennsylvania, horrific, horrific story of trauma and torture from her family. In fact, she did make a video for the YWCA. She got herself emancipated. And then when she was 18, she was able to stay here. She got her GED. She attended some college courses. And just having some place to sleep. One of the things that she said in her interview for us, for the first time in her life, she was able to sleep here without fearing for her life and her safety, or what they'd think of to do with her next. So the housing first, and Indo's right. If you have a place that's safe and warm, and your children are safe, and you don't have to worry about getting them out and get them out from under the viaduct before you get caught, makes all the difference in the world as to where the individual or family goes next. And we hear it all the time, Indo, Alizé, Jackie, Amanda, I feel safe. I have a place to live, and I don't have to be out in 25 days. And with us, there is no limit on the amount of time that you can stay, and you don't have to have the money up front. All you have to do is show the ability to pay, because we do charge a nominal rent. But we're not going to turn someone away because they don't have anything, because if they don't have anything, how can they get an apartment? And I think what a lot of people take for granted, I have photos of myself when I was a kid. I have some of my special toys when I was a kid. The women that we serve don't. They have, most of them have literally nothing from their childhood or to remember their child. And some of them don't want to remember their childhood, but so much of it we take for granted, they don't have access to, but they come in here in any of the programs to basically save their lives and the lives of their family.
Well stated, Nancy Okerlund. With us, Nancy Okerlund, Jackie Cook, Alizé Scott, and also Indo Quinones, along with, of course, Amanda Giesing, the executive director here at the YWCA Jamestown. We've talked to Jackie and Nancy about their programs. We cannot finish up this conversation without talking with Indo and Alizé about the Broadcast podcast. The Broadcast podcast. I cannot say that three times fast.
It's one of our more fun, for me at least, more fun things to do.
If you listen to it, you know it's fun.
It's just because, honestly, started with like, oh, just a bunch of us girls just like, what show can we do? What can we do? And it aligns with our mission, of course, eliminating racism, empowering women, and equity for everyone. We want to talk about things within the community, but also general, about anti-racist work and women's empowerment. So we have one of my favorite episodes was when we did the series on Native American Heritage Month. We had Brett Maybe. That was an amazing thing. We have our Halloween and holiday episodes. Those are more fun, but we talk about serious things like human trafficking. That's very heavy topic, but very real, and very real in Western New York, to the point where a lot of organizations are starting to really like talk about it within the organization community, and like, what can we do? Like, what there are so much miseducation or no education on what human trafficking is. That was one we did. And we do talk about sexual health education a lot because that is one of our big programs here at YWCA Jamestown. And I just enjoy it because it allows us to just have like this, just have our, I mean, I don't know how many listeners we have, 5, 10, whatever, but we're talking about these important things to us and to our community.
What about response? What kind of response have you been getting? You said you don't know, you're not totally sure how many people or how much they're paying attention. I've lived through this for many decades. I know this so very well. But yeah, what about the responses that you get? I'm just curious.
I know that my Nana loves it.
That's all the views.
Yeah. But no, I feel like it's been received pretty well. And I feel like because of how we just make it a normal conversation, we kind of normalize some of these taboo topics that, you know, sexual health, things along that line, racism, all of these things that aren't normal conversations for people that work outside of the social justice sector. We try to normalize them and get people to think about how they're very relevant to all of our lives and how we can kind of incorporate these conversations into everyday lives or even have these discussions with teens or children at home. Again, just trying to make this work more normal because it is something that affects all of us and that all of us experience on some level. So it's fun, but it's serious and it's a good time.
And just exploring different ways to outreach is, I think that's one of the things that this started out as. We obviously enjoy it. They're allowing us to do it. So we're going to continue doing it as long as we can. We have to start exploring organizations like ours, YWCA, Jamestown, who traditionally been one way. We have to start thinking of technology and the way people are communicating now in order to start talking about the real serious issues that affect everyone. That's why Broadcast. And Broads, it's one of those things where, we're trying to take back the word broad. So I was so we're all broads, and in the non-ironic way, we're all broads, and we're just broadcast.
And I feel like it also helps with our collaboration with other organizations and getting their names out there. Again, when people think of the Y, they think that we have the power to solve all social justice issues, when that is not the case. So it really helps us to bring in local experts and allow the community to know, hey, if you have an issue or, you know, a topic or a question about a specific topic, it's not our lane, but this wonderful person mm-hmm. knows all about it, and they're going to come share. And so that way we're also exposing the community, at least those who follow us, to different organizations that maybe they weren't aware of in the past.
All right, we're going to come down to our final question here, and I'm going to pass it around to everybody. And it's I'm going to actually start with Amanda Giesing, the executive director, put her on the spot here. But the question is this: what do you want? What should people know about Jamestown, this community? And it can be a negative, it can be a positive, it can be both. But what do you would you know? Because now you're talking to and obviously. Our radio station does get down to Jamestown. There's a repeater station down there. There's our little plug for ourselves. But the point of it is, you know, for a lot of people in Buffalo, Erie County, Niagara County, they don't get down to Jamestown much, if at all. What should they know? What would you want them to know about this community?
As a non-native Chautauqua County and Jamestown resident, I would say that we lack community pride severely. But it's actually a very beautiful place to live with tons of potential and a lot of younger, very passionate, extraordinary people who live and work here. And a lot of them work here at the YWCA.
I was just going to say. But
the whole community is just full of a lot of excitement. And I think a renaissance is coming.
Oh, I like the way that sounds. We're going to just go left to right here. So we'll go to you, Alizé. That means... Jackie, there's going to be some pressure on you to finish this up. Go ahead, Alizé. How about for you?
I feel like whenever people ask me where I'm from and to describe it, I always just say, it's a weird little town. Because it is. We have a very weird or different culture here. But I will say, this is home, and I love it here, and I definitely see the potential of where we could be a decade from now, even 5 years from now. For those who are Jamestown residents, I know, especially with my graduating class, it's like, we're getting out of here. Like, as soon as right. you graduate, like, it's time to leave. Yes, and here we are. So I feel it's important for us to recognize just what our community has and what we can even expand upon here and how we can shape it into something that we love to call home. So
Jamestown is worthy of appreciation. It is. It's... somewhere, I'm not gonna lie, I've complained about it. I've only lived here for like 8 years. I'm originally from Dunkirk, lived in Buffalo and Dunkirk, and but a Chautauqua County resident, born and raised. And the reason I like Jamestown is because it is kind of like a weird little town. but it has so much more than Lucille Ball and the Comedy Center, which are great. But I think, especially when you work with a community, there's this culture that is so, how Amanda said, is it lacks that pride, but I think it's because it's been hurt. So it's a place that's been hurt for so long, and it's ready for change. So those are my two things summed up. It's worthy of appreciation and ready for change.
Jamestown is at times discouraging because we have such a homeless issue. We do not have an emergency shelter for women. We do not have an emergency shelter for families. It has huge gaps as far as those go. But I know that Jamestown is trying to remedy those gaps. And the young people, and I can say that because I'm older than all you guys, they have an enthusiasm and a wish to make the changes and work towards the best Jamestown can be and just keep pushing until we get there.
I'm going to echo what Alizé said. I grew up here. I went to school in Faulkner, which is even smaller than Jamestown. And it was, as soon as we graduated, it's, let's get out of here. And I did, and I went away for 7 years. But what do? I come back here. We are very fortunate. We have got the sense of community. We may not be like, oh, yay, go Jamestown all the time. But whenever something happens, we do have the community here. We all come together. It's always been like that. That's kind of how I feel, is it's the community and it's home, and it'll always be a part of me.
All right, well, Jackie Cook is the director of Women to Women and the Young Women Choosing Action Program. Nancy Orkeland is Transition Supportive Housing Director. Alizé Scott, Social Justice and Race Equity Director. Indo Quinones, Mission Impact Director. And Amanda Giesing is the Executive Director of the YWCA Jamestown. Thank you very much for being with us on What's Next.
Thank you so much.